It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill, here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's a pleasant 54 degrees. We're still looking at a 50% chance of rain, mainly before 4 p.m. today. Mostly cloudy skies, high near 54, so we're there. South wind gusting as high as 30, and we have had some gusty winds today. 10% chance of rain before 7 p.m. tonight. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 48. Southerly winds could gust as high as 20. And for tomorrow, just a 20% chance of rain after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 54. So pretty nice day tomorrow for the live music out at the fairgrounds tomorrow night. Coming up on the Midday Report, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced his list of line item vetoes in the budget. It is not short. And the governor has once again rejected nominees from the Alaska Bar Association for Supreme Court judgeship and the tragedy in Bristol Bay. All that and more after NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The death toll at the site of a partially collapsed condo building in Surfside, Florida, has risen to 20, with 128 people still missing. In the meantime, a judge in Miami-Dade County is placing the assets of the Champlain Towers Condo Association in the hands of a receiver. NPR's Greg Allen reports the judge says payment should immediately be made available to those directly affected by the building's collapse.
Five lawsuits have already been filed naming the Condo Association as a defendant. Miami-Dade Circuit Judge Michael Hansman said the Condo Association's board members are in a difficult, stressful time and that, quote, it is time to step aside and let an independent party with no stake in the proceedings, either emotionally or financially, step in and take care of business. The Condo Association's insurance coverage totals $48 million. The judge estimates the condo's land, when sold, will add between $30 and $50 million to the fund. The judge told the receiver to provide payments up to $10,000 to families of missing or deceased and to residents who need housing assistance. He said $2,000 payments should be made available to families dealing with end-of-life costs. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
President Biden is holding a naturalization ceremony at the White House today. The president is welcoming 21 immigrants as the administration pushes for more pathways to citizenship.
You've each come to America from different circumstances, different reasons, and 16 different nationalities. But like previous generation of immigrants, there is one trait you all share in common: courage.
The Biden administration is expected to expand the legal immigration system, proposing policies that would help more immigrants move to the United States. A bipartisan group of lawmakers is urging the Federal Trade Commission to keep pursuing its antitrust case against Facebook after a judge dismissed the agency's first attempt. NPR's Shannon Bond reports the FTC has until the end of this month to refile its lawsuit.
The lawmakers, Senators Amy Klobuchar and Mike Lee, and Representatives David Cicilline and Ken Buck, are the most powerful members of the subcommittees that keep checks on how big companies wield their market power. Together, they've sent a joint letter to the FTC, saying its lawsuit against Facebook, quote, raised serious competitive concerns. The lawmakers say they will back the agency's efforts to protect competition and consumers. They're also working on bills to overhaul the nation's antitrust laws. A federal judge had dismissed the FTC's complaint, saying it did not show enough evidence for its claim Facebook is a monopoly, but said it could try again. Facebook is among NPR's financial supporters. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow was up 154 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday that he vetoed all remaining funding for permanent fund dividends in the state budget. He asked the legislature to pass PFD funding during a special session scheduled to start on August 2nd. There was only enough money for $525 dividends before it reached Dunleavy's desk. He says the dividend should follow a formula.
This $500 was really picked out of the air. It doesn't follow any formula at all. And so, as a result of many Alaskans contacting me, talking to me, talking to legislators who didn't support this $500 because they too viewed it as a joke, that the $500 is going to be vetoed.
Dunleavy announced the veto as part of a larger list of line item vetoes he announced a day after he signed the budget. The budget bill would have paid $1,100 PFDs, but there weren't enough votes to pass a motion that most of the dividend money depended on. Dunleavy said Alaskans have asked him to fight for the PFD. He repeated his call for the legislature to pass major changes that he has proposed. They include adjusting the dividend formula and putting the dividend and protecting the permanent fund's earnings reserve in the Constitution. He also would reduce the state limit on spending and require a public vote to add a broad-based tax. Nonpartisan analysts for the legislature have estimated that without policy changes, the gap between what the state would spend under Dunleavy's PFD proposal and what it would raise in revenue would be roughly $1 billion annually over the next 9 years. Dunleavy has not proposed changes to state policies to close that gap. He also vetoed a $4 billion transfer from the permanent fund's earnings reserve to the fund's constitutionally protected principal. And Dunleavy vetoed the daily payment to legislators that supplements their salaries and pays for living expenses during legislative sessions.
We've got to get the permanent fund permanent. That doesn't make a lot of sense to be paying ourselves if we're legislators, if we aren't completing the task.
In addition to the PFD veto, Dunleavy vetoed more than $200 million that was in the budget. The line item vetoes included cutting money for major maintenance projects at least three major university campuses, community assistance to municipal governments, and rural school construction. Also yesterday, Governor Mike Dunleavy asked for a new slate of nominees for a vacant seat on the Alaska Supreme Court to replace Chief Justice Joel Bolger, who is retiring. A similar rejection of judicial nominees in 2019 became one of the grounds for a recall campaign against Dunleavy. The Alaska Judicial Council nominated Anchorage Superior Court judges Danny Crosby, Jennifer Stewart Henderson, and Yvonne Lamoureux on May 25th. The Alaska Constitution requires that Dunleavy appoint someone the Judicial Council has nominated. In addition, under state law, Dunleavy has roughly a week to choose one of the nominees. The law requires he fills the vacancy within 45 days of receiving the nominations. Dunleavy described his position in a news conference yesterday.
We are hoping that we can get sent to our office all of the individuals that are vetted by the Judicial Council so that we have a larger pool to choose from because Alaska is diverse. But we will follow the Constitution, we'll follow the law.
But the Judicial Council is not allowed to reconsider the nominations unless there are not enough nominees available due to disability, death, or withdrawal, or a nominee being appointed to another position. That list doesn't include the governor requesting more nominees. Council Executive Director Suzanne DiPietro explains.
Other situations in which more names are requested are not included in the reasons why the council would reconsider under the bylaw.
In a letter to the council, Dunleavy wrote that, quote, "The slate of candidates put forward could be expanded to reflect the balance and diversity in philosophy and Alaskan experience requisite to adequately make a fair choice for the people of Alaska," close quote. Dunleavy singled Kotzebue Superior Court Judge Paul Roteman as an applicant who the council didn't nominate. He noted in the letter that Roteman had the most time as a judge and Alaska resident and was the only applicant from rural Alaska. Roteman is a Mexican-American and the only non-white applicant. But in an Alaska Bar Association survey, he was ranked 6th out of 7 appointees. DiPietro said the Judicial Council has been following similar procedures to nominate the most qualified applicants since Alaska became a state.
The process is so thorough, and there is so much information, and the council members are using the same, each one of them is using the same standards.
The bylaws also require the council to make, quote, every effort to promote diversity, including gender and ethnic diversity, close quote. Currently, Justice Susan Carney is the only woman on the Supreme Court. The three nominations from the council are all women. This is the second time in 2 years that Dunleavy has asked for different nominees for a vacant judgeship. In 2019, he failed to nominate a nominee for the Palmer Superior Court vacancy within 45 days and asked for different nominees. Then Chief Justice Joel Bolger issued a statement saying the governor's office didn't seem to understand that the Alaska Constitution requires that the governor appoint one of the council's nominees. After meeting with Bolger, Dunleavy later appointed one of the original nominees, Kristen Stoller, to the Palmer seat. Dunleavy's failure to fill the Palmer vacancy within the legal time frame became one of the grounds for the ongoing recall campaign against him. DiPietro said Thursday afternoon that the council will be responding to the governor's letter, but it was too soon to say how it would respond. A commercial fisherman has died after a vessel sank in the south end of Nushagak Bay Thursday morning with three people on board. Authorities today identified the deceased as Lance Eric Norby, 45, of Arlington, Texas. He captained the FV Numa. Norby's next of kin has been notified. Alaska State Troopers report receiving a call about 5 a.m. Thursday morning that a commercial vessel was taking on water. Two wildlife troopers responded immediately. Before they got there, they heard reports that three people on board were in the water. Authorities credit Good Samaritans on the scene with helping in the rescue. Among those was skipper Caleb Mickelson. He says his crew was getting ready for an opener when he got a call from a friend that there was a vessel in distress on the VHF radio.
We could hear that there was two boats and a skiff trying to help this vessel that was sinking out on those Snake River flats there.
The people at the scene said they needed help, so Mickelson piloted his boat, the FV Fortress, about 7 miles to go to help.
Pounded my boat down through all the waves and stuff to get down there, and by the time I got there, I realized the two boats were two deep tenders that were like, you know, they draft 10 or 15 feet, so they were practically useless. And then the skiff was a trooper skiff, and there were like, I don't know, 6 or 8 foot breaking curlers going on that bar.
Mickelson said troopers had one of the people in their skiff. By that time, the boat had fully submerged in breakers, so he and his crew started looking for the rest of that crew.
I could barely see the skiff, and I could barely drive my boat in the breakers. So we were driving around. I was just zigzagging, had all my crew on the very top flying bridge of my boat, scouting out, and saw a buoy light, went for that, and there was one of the guys had the buoy light, was holding it, so we pulled him up on our jet guard.
They found a third person and conducted CPR and attempted other life-saving efforts. Coast Guard Petty Officer Nate Littlejohn said a Jayhawk helicopter arrived on the scene.
The Coast Guard lowered a rescue swimmer, and Alaska State Troopers arrived on scene and determined that a third person was in fact deceased.
He credited the Good Samaritan vessels with providing aid. He says it was a rough morning for everyone involved.
It's always difficult when we arrive on scene and find that it's too late to be able to save a life.
Littlejohn also thanked the Good Samaritans on the Fortress and the Last Frontier. Mickelson said that after the ordeal, he and his crew were in shock and talked about what happened before they headed back out to fish for the rest of the day. While it is the end of Mark Lester's tenure as CEO of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, he's adamant that the story of spaceflight in Alaska is only in its first chapters.
This is pretty neat. I think our kids will look back on this, our grandkids will look back on it, and they will be routinely going through space to reach their destinations on the Earth, or going to the moon, or even going to Mars, and putting satellites in space. And someone will read in a history book how Kodiak, back in the 2020s, was a key place for doing that, and it will still be a key place for doing that.
Lester has a striking analogy to describe where he sees the industry going.
If we look at our smartphones, iPhones, and Samsung Galaxy devices, there was no apps for those phones before they were created. And then people started getting ideas of navigation tools or games to play on it or entertainment and streaming stuff. And now there's a multi-billion dollar industry that grew from nothing to create applications for the smartphone. I see the same thing happening with space.
Lester has been the CEO of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation since 2018, but he has been involved in the aerospace industry since he was a lieutenant in the Air Force Space Command in the early 90s. He's still staying in the industry, too. He'll be joining the executive team of Phantom Space Corporation in Tucson. In the interim, John Kramer will be stepping in as CEO while the board of directors searches for a new acting chief executive. Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak crews opened their forward operating location in Kotzebue, according to a Coast Guard press release this morning. Forward operating locations, such as the one in Kotzebue, allow the Coast Guard to reduce their response time to Alaska's northwestern coast. Helicopters and equipment are transferred up there in summer months. This year, the forward operating location will support Arctic Shield 2021, which is the deployment of Coast Guard assets to protect the maritime community on the Arctic coast. The state legislature is considering a pair of bills that would limit the use of certain chemicals in firefighting foam and to help communities whose drinking water has been contaminated. A new study looked at the current impact of those chemicals. KSFK's Katie Anastas has this report.
PFAS, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, have been found in food packaging, cookware, waterproof fabrics, and stain repellents. They're known as forever chemicals because they don't break down in the environment. PFAS have been linked to cancer, immune system problems, low infant birth weights, and increased cholesterol. In the first study of its kind since 2004, researchers at the University of Washington, Seattle Children's Research Institute, and Indiana University studied PFAS in breast milk. Samples came from 50 first-time mothers in and around Seattle. Every sample had at least one type of PFAS. More than half of the samples had 12 types. Nick Reardon with Alaska Collaborative on Health and the Environment moderated a webinar about the new study on Wednesday.
And so while the women in the study reside in Washington State, it raises concerns in Alaska. And here in Alaska, at least, we have 10 communities that have PFAS in their drinking water at levels deemed unsafe by the EPA. And PFAS has been found in the water of over 30 Alaskan communities. And it's likely that the number of communities with contaminated water will grow as more sampling is conducted.
Reardon said this is especially important to study in Alaska because of its impacts on the natural environment.
Concern grows even more as it becomes increasingly clear that PFAS are not only contaminating groundwater and surface waters, but also the fish, the wild game. There's even been closures of several lakes in Alaska to fishing as a result of PFAS contamination.
PFAS can get into food through packaging, soil, or water. Sheila Sathyanarayana, one of the authors of the study, is a pediatric environmental health specialist and the medical director for the newborn nursery at the University of Washington Medical Center. She said one of the best ways to avoid consuming PFAS is by varying your diet and food sources. In Alaska, one way to do that is changing up your fishing spot.
Within Alaska, there have been these chemicals found in fish. And so if you consume fish from that lake every single day or multiple times a week, you're likely to have higher exposures to these chemicals.
Another big source is firefighting foam. Airports and military facilities that use firefighting foam can spread PFAS to groundwater, putting local communities at risk for health impacts. Another author on the study, Erica Schrader, said most foams with PFAS are meant to put out oil fires.
So the primary uses have been at places like airports and refineries, and that's resulted in contamination of drinking water.
Sathya Narayana said, on an individual level, avoiding processed foods is one of the best ways to reduce consumption of PFAS.
One thing that I try to tell people is really there is no zero exposure. In our industrialized societies, we just cannot get to zero. We're all exposed to some amount of chemicals. And so really what we want to try to do is work on reducing our overall environmental exposures.
On the state level, Senator Jesse Keel and Representative Sarah Hannan have introduced bills to phase out the use of PFAS in firefighting foam, establish drinking water standards, and provide testing and clean water for communities affected by PFAS contamination. In Petersburg, I'm Katie Anastas.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The call is out for names to fill a fish board seat. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
The call is out for nominees to fill one open seat on the State Board of Fisheries. The opening stems from the Alaska legislature's giving a thumbs down to Governor Dunleavy's appointment of Abe Williams, a longtime regional affairs director for the Pebble Mine. Williams was rejected during a marathon six-hour session on May 13 in what Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham called a drubbing. According to Alaska statute, Dunleavy was required to name a replacement within 30 days, but that time frame has come and gone. Jeff Turner, Deputy Director of Communications, said in an email that the governor is taking additional time to receive input from all stakeholders before making a selection, and that he has committed to filling the seat before the next Board of Fish meeting in October. By this past March, the Fish Board was scheduled to have finished up 275 proposals for Southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound, and statewide shellfish. But the normal meeting cycle was disrupted by the COVID pandemic. Board's director, Glenn Haight, explains the new meeting lineup.
Starting in October 2021, it will do its work session, but then following that, it will do a Prince William Sound meeting in November, December, and then a Southeast Finfish Shellfish meeting in January, and then in March, it would do its statewide all-shellfish meeting.
Then in October of 2022, the Fish Board's work session will be followed by a two-day PCOD meeting and fishery issues for Bristol Bay and Chignik, the Bering Sea, Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim, and Alaska Peninsula regions. Currently, only one of the seven board seats is held by a person from a coastal region. John Jensen of Petersburg. United Fishermen of Alaska said that Governor Dunleavy is open to considering applicants from all across Alaska. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 12. Date issued July 1st at 10 a.m. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, July 1st, until 9 p.m. Saturday, July 3rd, in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Inner and Outer Upper Station sections of the Alatak District, and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Cost recovery fisheries began in the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area, also known as Telrod Cove, and the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishing opportunities in the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability to meet the Regional Aquaculture Association's cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Closed waters are currently reduced until further notice in the following areas. In the inner upper station section of the Allatac District, waters will remain open to the stream terminus of Olga Creek, stream number 257304. In Fowl Bay, to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. And in Waterfall Bay, to the stream terminus of Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fishing Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Sorry, a little early on that. Well, welcome to your Friday Island Messenger. It is the second day of July. I actually wrote June here. I can't let go of June. Seems like we got March again during this last June. But it is the second day of July, the year 2021. The sun rose at 5:15. It won't set again until 11:11. That will give us 17 hours and 57 minutes of daylight, a loss of 1 minute and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 38, set in 2009, and our record high was 78, set in 1989. Currently 54 degrees, and we're looking for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day. 50% chance of rain, mainly before 4. South wind to 20, gusting as high as 30 today. For tonight, 10% chance of rain before 7. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 48. South winds to 15, gusting as high as 20. And for Saturday, just a 20% chance of rain after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies on Saturday with a high near 54 again and south winds to 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 2:40 p.m. That will be a 1.5-foot tide here on the east side. Our next high tide will be at 9:30 this evening and be 7.2 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Zachar Bay tides, your next low tide will be at 3:21 p.m. and be 3 feet. And your high tide will be at 9:49 p.m. and be 11.7 feet. If you're thinking of going out on the water, for the Shelikof Strait, southeast 20 today, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, south 20, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, south 15, seas to 4 feet. For Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, southeast 20 right now, becoming south 15 this afternoon, seas to 6 feet, subsiding to 4 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, south 10, increasing to 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet in Chiniac Bay tomorrow. Up in Marmot Bay, southeast 20 right now, seas to 7 feet. For tonight in Marmot Bay, south 20, diminishing to 10 knots after midnight, seas 5 feet, subsiding to 2 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in Marmot Bay, south wind to 10 knots, becoming southeast 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.